The Upper Room presents So You Want to Stay Married. Today's episode in this study of family life in the modern home is Two Heads Are Better Than One, especially written and produced for The Upper Room by Carlton E. Morse, featuring John McIntyre as the judge, Peggy Weber as Ruth, and Sam Edwards as Gordon. In every city of any size in the United States, there are one or more courts of justice whose time is almost completely taken up with dissolving unhappy marriages. The appalling tragedies stalking these miserable halls can be counted among society's foremost crimes against individual human beings. Into the divorce courts stream an unending flow of frustrated, unhappy men and women. And out of the divorce court come aimless, hopeless, lost humanity, now completely adrift. How many of those unhappy marriages could have been saved if only there had been some understanding, sympathetic man of sufficient stature and experience to take the dissatisfied young couple in hand? A man such as Judge Hardwick, for instance.
Ruth and Gordon McKnight?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor.
You came here to this court this morning to have your marriage dissolved?
Yes, sir.
You both desire this divorce?
No, sir. Just Ruth.
Ruth, I see your complaint charges incompatibility.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not cruelty?
Oh, no, sir, never.
Never not unfaithfulness?
No, of course not.
Just plain incompatibility?
Yes.
Ruth, I want to see you and Gordon in my private chambers. Bailiff, court's adjourned for half an hour. This way, please.
But it's all settled.
This way, please. Inside, please. Please sit down.
Judge, as much as I don't want Ruth to divorce me, I think she's got the right to do it, and I don't see why we have to go through another painful scene.
Sit down, Gordon.
Yes, sir.
Ruth, inasmuch as you're the plaintiff in this divorce action, I'm going to have to ask you the questions. In what manner is Gordon's and your life incompatible?
Well, I'm just bored to death. Marriage isn't the kind of thing I thought it was at all. I'm just bored, that's all. I'll go crazy if I have to stand much more of it.
Don't you love him anymore?
Oh, I don't know. What is love?
Well, let's put it this way. Don't you like him anymore?
Yes, most of the time. That's one of the reasons I want to be divorced. There's nothing the matter with Gordon, and I don't want to dislike him, but there are times when I can't stand him, and those times come oftener and oftener. If I don't look out, I'm going to turn out hating him, and that'd be awful.
Judge, is this necessary?
I think so, yes. Don't you have anything to say against Ruth's accusations?
We've talked all this out endlessly. I've told her over and over that I love her, and I've tried to prove it by my actions. I've done everything I know, and it makes no difference. At first, Ruth didn't seem to want my company. Now she wants her freedom. It's been a progressive thing, and it's something in Ruth. I'm sorry and hurt and feel terribly frustrated. But Ruth's an individual, and if she feels that way...
I see. Always the gentleman.
I only meant...
Yes, I know, Gordon. Ruth, tell me what an ordinary day in your home is like.
Well, naturally, Gordon has a long commute into the city in the morning. He has to get up at 5:30, except Saturday and Sunday. Well, except Sunday, because Saturday he gets up just as early to go out and play golf.
You get up and get his breakfast?
5:30? Besides, the doctor has him on a diet, and all he can eat is a dish of fruit and toast and coffee.
Now, that's not Ruth's fault, Your Honor. I have my own business in town, and I like that hour in the morning by myself to think out some of my business problems and look at the morning paper.
I see. And then how does your day go, Ruth?
Mm-mm. Get up when I feel like it.
No children, of course?
No.
No. We decided we couldn't afford children while I'm getting my business going. It takes every cent.
I want Ruth to tell this, Gordon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, as I say, there's no reason why I should get up at any particular time. It makes the day go faster if I don't get up until 10 or 11.
What a terrible thought.
I don't understand.
Lying in bed late to make the days go faster. Why, my dear child, I rise at 5 o'clock some mornings just to make the days long enough to do all the interesting things in the world I want to do.
But you have responsibilities.
So do you. So does every wife.
Keep the house clean, get dinner. I can do that in an hour. I send out all our laundry and pressing, things like that. Then a cleaning woman comes in twice a week.
If your husband needs extra money to get his business started, why not do those things yourself?
I offered...
Why should she? My wife's not an old-fashioned house drudge. She's a good-looking girl with nice hands and a nice complexion.
But if your husband can afford a cleaning woman and arrange your living so that you can keep your nice hands and complexion, and I might add have your hair done by a beauty parlor, then why can't you afford to have children?
The added expense is...
Expense of selfishness?
Why,
no,
well, that is...
Really, Gordon thought if we waited a couple of years, then we'd be able to give the children everything they should have.
Did you want to wait?
Well, I thought maybe Gordon knew best. He handled the money. He's the only one who knows about the business.
Just a minute. You say he handles the money?
Why, yes.
You mean to sit here and tell me that you say he's the only one who knows about the business? The business you're helping him to build by your sacrifices? By going without children? By doing without his companionship from 5:30 in the morning until whatever hour he gets home in the evening?
6:30.
You don't know anything about the business that's supposed to be the foundation for your future financial security and the security of your children? Doesn't the man talk to you?
Now, just a minute, Judge.
I mean it, Gordon. What do you and your wife have in common? According to Ruth, you spend even your Saturdays on the golf course. What about Sunday? Do you spend that with her?
Some of it.
Some of it?
Well, she likes to go to church. That gives me a good opportunity to...
A good opportunity not to be with her some more.
Now, look here, you... I mean, Your Honor, if you're trying to make it look like I don't care for Ruth...
Either you don't care for her, or else you have a most peculiar conception of what marriage consists of.
I don't see how you can say it's Gordon any more than me. Is it Gordon's fault he has to go to the office at 5:30? Is it his fault we haven't money enough for children, or that he likes outdoor sports and I don't, or that I like to go to church and he doesn't? And it certainly is not his fault that I'm not very good about money and honestly wouldn't know what he was talking about if he were to tell me about the office.
How do you know you wouldn't understand? Have you ever tried it?
Well, Gordon said I...
Yes, Gordon said you wouldn't understand money or the office, and you believed him.
I don't think she would. And why clutter up a woman's mind with such things anyway?
Gordon, did you ever hear of the Indian fakir who held his arm over his head until finally it grew that way and he couldn't take it down?
Yes, sir.
Well, the mind can be abused in the same way. Looks to me like you've consciously or unconsciously molded Ruth's mind to fit your conception of what a wife should know and be.
That's not fair.
Aren't you trying to pattern your marriage after your father and mother's marriage?
Why, I...
Wasn't your father the dominating male and your mother the weak, protected woman?
Yes, that's exactly the way it was, Judge.
Yes, I suppose so.
And so, unconsciously... At least I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. You've been trying to mold Ruth into the same kind of a family. Probably your father likewise said there would be no children until he was a man with money.
Well, they had been married 15 years before I was born.
Well, Gordon, don't you see, that's mid-Victorian. That's not the way family life is lived today. Ruth's a modern, intelligent girl, a companion, a helpmate. She's been bred and trained to stand beside a man, do her part. No wonder she's been bored to distraction by the role you've given her to live.
But, Ruth, you never protested. You never said that you...
I guess I didn't quite realize what was going on myself. After all, your mother always agreed with what your father said and didn't ask questions. And I don't remember my own mother. Gordon... Maybe I could understand about what you do at the office. Maybe not right at first, but...
I don't know, Ruth.
Gordon, I have a feeling that whether this marriage succeeds or fails from this point on depends on you.
You mean Ruth isn't getting a divorce? You mean that, Ruth?
What? Why, I hadn't thought...
Well, now, wait just a moment. Not so fast, you two. There are a few fundamentals about marriage of which neither of you seem to have any knowledge. It's been found throughout long periods of study by competent people that our attitude toward marriage, the expectation of success, is one of the strongest motives for keeping a man and woman interested in making their marriage successful. Together, mind you. The hope of success, the expectation of success. It's a common goal, a common interest. It gives zest to living. Don't you see, Gordon, you've been depriving Ruth of much of her interest in living by shutting her out.
It never occurred to me that I was...
Of course not. But think about it now. And don't neglect children. They're a common interest, too. Children and a common working goal are two elements which bind a man and woman close together. There's so many problems to be worked out, so many solutions they've got to find together. Gordon, many, many of your problems at the office would dissolve into nothing if you were to tell them to Ruth. Just in the telling will bring balm to your spirit, even if there isn't a solution.
Oh, Gordon, would you? Could you?
I don't see why not. I mean, you really think you'd be interested?
Of course.
But I never thought of you as interested in business and figures.
Well, it's not the figures I'd be interested in. It'd be you, what you do with those figures, what they mean to you and me.
Then you mean you don't want a divorce?
We can do it this new way. And if you'll let me do all the housework so we can have the children...
You mean you want to do things? That you don't care if we have a hard time financially?
I don't care about anything if I'm a part of it. But Gordon, darling, don't ever put me away in a box again or put me on a pedestal or whatever you were doing. I'm a living, breathing human girl, and I've got a lot of red corpuscles in my bloodstream, and I want to be somebody and do things and feel things. I want to love and be loved. I want to fight and win or lose and do all the other things women do with their husbands all over the world.
Well, will you listen to the girl?
Is it a deal?
Why not?
Oh, darling.
I must have been blind.
What an empty, lonesome world it would be if I'd have gone out of here with a divorce.
You're telling me. Your Honor, we owe you the... Hey, where'd he go?
What? He must have slipped out.
Well, bless his kind, understanding heart. I tell you what we'll do. We'll name our first son after him.
Oh, yes.
If the family ties are uncertain and giving way, family worship will help to strengthen them. Worship in the church of your choice and have daily devotions in your home. The church and the home are the basic rocks upon which the moral structure of this nation is built. They should be and must be one united foundation. Ask your pastor for devotional helps or send a postcard to The Upper Room, Nashville, Tennessee. Your announcer, Russell Thorson.